From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Patrick Terry, acting CEO of the Grand Therapeutics Foundation, and Dr. Christopher Austin, director of the NIH Chemical Genomics Center, are interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about the Gateway to Rare and Neglected Disorders Therapeutics Initiative, also known as GRAND RX.
Patrick Terry serves as the acting CEO of the Grand Therapeutics Foundation. Dr. Christopher Austin is the director of the Chemical Genomics Center at the U.S. National Institutes of Health. He is also a member of the board of the journal Assay and Drug Development Technologies, which is published by Marianne Liebert. Patrick, let's start the discussion with you. What is GRAND RX and what are its goals?
So GRAND RX is our attempt at a fancy acronym for an initiative that's called Gateway for Rare and Neglected Disease Drug Development. So GRAND RX. And the objectives were comprised over a series of discussions in the last 18 months with a variety of stakeholders. And stakeholders, I mean academicians, industry, venture capitalists, government personnel, Congress, and the appropriators to try to identify what's been described in industry as the valley of death, this dilemma of product development, demonstrating safety and efficacy for therapeutic approaches to alleviate the burden of human disease. And then there's unique or specifically inherent problems in the area of rare and neglected, meaning that they both have a similar challenge with an economic reality to actually develop and get regulatory registration and approval for manufacturing and distribution and delivery to patients with small patient populations, or in the case of some neglected disease, you have massive patient populations, but obviously in economic conditions and in nations that are unwilling or unable to afford the costs of therapeutics or don't have the infrastructure to actually deliver those interventions to their population. So based on those discussions, the disease community and the umbrella organizations representing a variety of diseases attempted to craft an idea, and this is aspirational with this GRAND RX initiative, to organize ourselves, and we believe that transformation of product development in this arena will be driven by novel collaborations. And the idea of bringing novel partnerships together, can we think of these challenges in new ways and devise a way to create an infrastructure or a process or a series of processes that enable an industrialization of the drug development approach? Certainly that has been enhanced by the federal government activity in this arena and Congress's commitment to more resources to the NIH and other federal organizations to get involved in this applied medicine or applied science arena, in this translational medicine arena, to start transforming this wealth of knowledge that we have about disease mechanisms and about basic science and about relationship of disease and the genome around these diseases and get much more systematic about converting that into a product and solution to patients and disease. So that is a high-level description of what the initiative is, and who's involved in that initiative. It's a number of umbrella organizations, which include the Foundation for Fighting Blindness, Faster Cures, NORD, the Genetic Alliance, the RARE Project, and a number of other large disease-specific advocacy organizations. So this initiative is fundamentally the disease community or the advocacy community representing disease populations coming together to understand not only the drug development process, but the challenges associated with developing products and getting it approved. And the advantage of an initiative like this and a not-for-profit organizational structure, it allows much more intimate partnership interactions with industry, as well as with universities, with the NIH, with the FDA, with CMS, to really put together and understand the perspectives and the cultural aspects of each of these independent organizations that are crucial for the entire process for drug discovery, drug development, delivery, payment, reimbursement, and the whole life cycle here of delivering solutions to patients. So that is the initiative from a conceptual level and who's involved. This organization has come together recently. There's been some public pronouncements about its activities. It's submitted abstracts and gone to medical and clinical meetings to talk to the professional communities about this initiative and to engage key opinion leaders and thought leaders in all of these arenas to see if we can come together with like minds and clearly identify what are the challenges and the systemic barriers ahead of us, and then how collectively we would bring new solutions to bear on these challenges.
Was there a major driver for the GrandRx initiative?
Yeah, John, there was. Even with my own experience, so there are key individual experiences here that have driven a state of awareness or an enlightenment that there's a number of disease organizations that have been highly effective at organizing the scientific community, organizing the business of science to actually deliver solutions to a specific constituency group or disease community. For instance, there's lots of organizations now, such as my own, that have gone from, you know, a mom-and-pop organization around a kitchen table to organize a foundation and collect biological materials and do genome screens and find punitive causation in the genome to their disease condition and developing diagnostics and animal models and then human intervention trials in short amounts of time, and then actually replicating some of those models and actually seeing you can deliver even more efficiencies here in different scenarios where it took a decade to go from a basic genetic discovery to a human clinical trial to scenarios where it takes less than 5 years. So there was an awakening in the disease community that rather than replicating the wheel again and again and trying to do this one-off disease by disease, that the communities that have been effective have decided to self-organize and share current best practices and understand what works and what doesn't, and then how can we industrialize this process? Because you quickly realize when, you know, your family is struck with a disease and you understand the emotional and impact of a rare disease diagnosis and the urgency in which people want solutions and look to the external community or industry to provide those solutions, that the challenges and the experiences are universal, but the solutions and the pathway or the waymarks of really how do you proceed, how do you have an impact on patients and outcome, there's no reason why that should be a learning experience each and every time. So there's aspects of this process we can industrialize and share and redefine the pre-competitive landscape here, both in industry as well as in the culture of patient advocacy groups. There has been a history of self-reliance and self-organization, and even to the point where you get multiple organizations around a single disease community competing against one another and developing adversarial relationships that really serve no one's interests. So we're trying to model good behavior in the disease community. We're trying to do a cultural shift and redefine what does disease-specific advocacy mean. And if we focus in on good science, on good practices, there's no reason why we should fight against one another, that indeed if science leads us in a certain direction, we should all pursue that because we are helping common cause here. And with 7,000 rare genetic diseases, there's no way in our lifetime, if we proceed in the way we've been proceeding, that we'll ever have a meaningful impact on that array of diseases. So the community itself is trying to work together and figure out ways and form in which they can do that, as well as throw the complexity on of dealing with government and industry and seeing if we can force everybody to play together nicely.
I've heard it said that GrandRx has taken a systems approach to shorten drug discovery and development timelines and to hopefully increase the success rate of the introduction of new therapeutics. What are the main elements of the GrandRx systems approach? approach.
Taking a step backwards, it became apparent to us that it's like any complex story or system. It really depends on where you stand, what the view looks like. The process now has been we've done a series of constituency interviews with all of the major players in drug discovery, drug development, commercialization, and reimbursement, to understand this whole life cycle of what does a successful drug candidate look like, what does a successful and rigorous clinical study look like, what is the quality of the molecular biology, the med chem, the animal studies, all the way through this process. So we get each of the stakeholders' opinions on what this complex picture looks like, as well as a more direct utility of actually trying to ascertain what are the attributes of a successful candidate. That if you could compile information about not only the 7,000 or so rare disease indications and their potential mechanisms of action or their pathobiology, can you do the same for chemical candidates or drug candidates? And actually do a survey or a landscape analysis of what exists out there and where for these disease indications, because if indeed the federal government is going to commit new resources, if the private sector is going to commit new resources to rare and neglected disease drug development, ultimately, how can you, in a rigorous way, in an evidence-based approach, put together a priority list based on science and all of these elements of what makes an ideal candidate for drug development. So we're crafting not only this tool and this list of attributes, but we're building in vector logic and natural intelligence informatics to this system. So ultimately, we want to be able to create an information source, put it up on the web, have the ability to interrogate these candidates and these indications. So not only industry and others could look at what are opportunities, but ultimately we can educate the disease community about what are these scientific and clinical attributes for an opportunity. So if you're an XYZ disease and you see that you're in the lower third of the priority list, there is an indication of why you are where you are in this priority list. So we can actually spur direct and inform choices about what science needs to be done, what other types of applied studies or translational work needs to be done to raise this indication into a higher priority indication.
Chris Austin, could you expand and talk about how the NIH's Chemical Genomics Center and other NIH units interface with the GrandRx initiative and help it achieve some of its goals?
The NCGC and the new Therapeutics for Rare and Neglected Disease initiative has worked very closely with organizations like GRAND and GRAND itself to involve the advocacy communities and the biotech community, as well as the academic community, in the work that we're doing in this area. This is a fantastically hard problem and is something we really view as an obligatorily team sport. So while NIH is putting scientific expertise and resources, which are somewhat atypical to the academic or government ecosystem until now, into solving this problem, we cannot do it alone. We need the support and collaboration of our colleagues in the other sectors. So that's what we're doing with GRAND as a convener for these other parts of the research ecosystem.
Chris, in some of the presentations I've heard about GrandRx and in some of the literature, I see the term main barriers and walls to new drug discovery and clinical development. It's discussed in almost every presentation I've listened to or seen having to do with GrandRx. Can you define what the walls or these barriers are that you see as these as barriers to new drug discovery and clinical development?
When GRAND was being envisioned, there were many consultations that were done with individuals in scientists and policy people in the academic sector, in the biotech sector, the nonprofit sector, the venture capital sector, to really define what parts of the drug development process for rare and neglected diseases are working reasonably well and which are not. And what came from that process was the identification of these three principal barriers that in the Grand RX vernacular are called brick walls, because they really are barriers that prevent progress from happening. The first of these is the transition through the so-called assay wall. What we're referring to there is the movement of a basic research discovery, typically in an academic laboratory, which may identify an intervention point in a disease, a putative intervention point for a disease. In other words, a target against which a small molecule, for instance, might be directed. The movement of that target out of the lab in which it was discovered into an environment where an early stage small molecule might be identified. And so that involves the development of a high throughput screening compatible assay. And because this kind of technology, this high throughput screening early drug development technology, has not traditionally been available to academic researchers, this this art and science of assay development for HTS is something that most academic researchers are simply not familiar with, and it is traditionally at least been very difficult to fund under the NIH funding schemes. So that's the assay wall. Once the assays are developed, partially through the NIH and partially through other organizations, there is now a rather robust capacity to take those assays, put them into high-throughput screens, do the chemical informatics required in the early-stage medicinal chemistry required to make a probe or lead compound out of what came out of the screen, in order to produce a probe, a research probe generally, that can be used to go back and test the therapeutic hypothesis that the program started with. At that point, however, we run into the preclinical wall, or the chemistry wall. This is the stage from a probe or lead compound to an IND, or perhaps proof of principle in human beings kind of study, and involves a more medicinal chemistry and increasingly complicated and in-depth pharmacological, toxicological, pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic testing and qualification of these compounds in order to make them initially suitable for an IND, investigational new drug application, with the FDA for use in humans, and then testing for efficacy in humans in a phase 2 trial. It is traditionally and still remains very difficult to do this kind of work for a disease which does not generate sufficient return on investment, which rare and neglected diseases do not do. So that was the second wall. The third wall is the clinical wall. Interestingly, the way that these programs have tended to happen in the past is that the scientific development of a compound to be tested in humans has been done entirely independent of the patients in whom those putative drugs will one day be tested. And so when one gets to the point of having an IND and being able to test these compounds in patients, the patients are not readily identifiable. There have not been adequate natural history studies done. There are no biobanks. The other things which are either required or very helpful in doing a clinical trial on these compounds simply don't exist. And so either it introduces a many-year delay for those registries and biobanks and other studies to be done or to be created, or it means that the company typically who created the drug in the first place simply runs out of money in the time it takes to actually put a clinical trial together so that the drug never makes it to market. And so the Grand RX initiative aims to change all three of these by creating resources initially through the TREND program for assay development and preclinical development of small molecule compounds for rare neglected diseases, and to solve the clinical wall, mainly through the nonprofit sector and the disease foundations, who will start working on these kinds of long-term issues of creating registries and biobanks and natural history studies for the many rare diseases that exist. So if and when there are drugs developed for them, those communities will be assembled.
In light of the lack of funding for these rare disorders and also in view of these walls you've just been talking about, is there an example or two of a project that you're doing at the Chemical Genomics Center that sort of illustrates how you're trying to overcome these walls and meet these obstacles?
I'll give you two examples. One is a neglected disease. The other is a rare disease. A neglected disease that we're working on initially in the NIH Chemical Genomics Center and now is one of the pilot projects for the TREND initiative is a project on schistosomiasis, which is a highly prevalent parasitic disease. It occurs mainly in Africa and South America, affects about 280 million people worldwide. This is a project that is done with an investigator at Rush University in Chicago, David Williams, who came to us with a hypothesis that a novel parasitic enzyme, if inhibited, might effectively eradicate this infection. And working with him, we created an assay, did a screen, developed compounds which showed that, in fact, the compounds which inhibit this enzyme do indeed kill schistosome parasites, both ex vivo and in vivo in a mouse model of schistosomiasis. And at this point, we've moved that project into preclinical development. We're in the late lead optimization stage now in that project, still working with David Williams at Rush, and also with another investigator named Michael Capello at Yale on this disorder as well. And we've begun discussions with a number of neglected disease non-governmental organizations, including the World Health Organization and the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative and the Gates Foundation, about moving these compounds into humans. That process for neglected diseases is, of course, even more challenging than it is for rare diseases because though they are highly prevalent, the health infrastructure does not exist generally in the countries where people are affected with these disorders. So we need to start thinking now about how such a drug would be tested in a clinical population so that if we are lucky enough to come up with a clinical candidate which can be tested in humans, those patients will be available for that testing. Another example is another TREND pilot project, which started out as an NCGC project on a rare neurodegenerative disease called Niemann-Pick C disease. It affects only 1 to 200 people in the United States, but this is a neurodegenerative disorder which kills its victims somewhere between age 10 and 15 of a multi-system neurodegeneration process. And this particular process, this particular project came out of a screen done at the NCGC about 2 years ago, and we found a currently approved drug which turned out to be quite efficacious in clearing the cholesterol storage defect in patients with this disorder. And so we're now working with investigators at two universities as well as the NIH Clinical Center to do animal studies and an eventual human trial, which will probably start this fall, move this hopefully into clinical testing. That project is being done in close coordination with the Disease Foundation, sort of an umbrella organization, if you will, called the SOAR Initiative, which is an umbrella organization of a number of patient NPC foundations, and they're critical partners in this program to involve the patients who will eventually be patients in the clinical trial on which this drug will be tested, hopefully by the end of this year.
Patrick Terry, I'll direct my final question to you. Can you give us a status report on your impression of what GrandRx has accomplished so far, and what do you think still needs to be done so the initiative moves further along towards meeting its goals?
As Chris said, this is a team sport, so getting on the same field and organized is inherently a challenge. So reaching a platform of trust and engagement is taking place in having a sense of tempered urgency here of wanting to see it happen sooner and more efficiently than it actually is frustrating at times, but we have to recognize that this is certainly a different way to organize not only the disease community but product development in its entirety. So it is a challenge, but we are making progress. Certainly the work that Chris has done and with the Trend Initiative getting established and having the infrastructure put in place and having the federal organization directed towards applied science is moving forward, and that's certainly very satisfying to see. And then the disease communities itself are on this arc or this continuum of evolving into understanding not only this process but what the challenges are and how collectively we can overcome them and get through these barriers or these walls that Chris described. So I think we are coming up to speed on collectively understanding the problem and the challenges and the incremental next steps. So I'm delighted to see that the broader and diverse disease community is aligning themselves with the GrandRx initiative and realizing if we all pull in the same direction, we may not necessarily advance the specific interest of the disease communities in which we represent, but collectively we can make a huge impact on alleviating the burden and suffering of a variety of diseases and pursue the science and the opportunities where they present themselves. So it's a work in progress, but I'm quite pleased on where we've come from and where we are today.
Patrick, if anyone in Jen's global audience wants to learn more about GrandRx or is even interested in possibly collaborating, where do they go for a website to find out more information?
Sure. So there is a website up, and it's just grandrx.org. And if they have interactions with any of these other umbrella organizations like Faster Cures or NORD or the Genetic Alliance, or the Foundation Finding Blindness, interacting with those organizations and extending those relationships and working with each of these groups, because we all have a piece of the puzzle here, so we're all working collectively and independently toward the same aim. So there's a variety of connection points for your readership.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.